Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Wednesday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick. Obviously, the big story of the day, the AT&T Time Warner deal going through, a lot of follow-through to discuss there. So that'll be the lead of today's show and probably the bulk of the first half of the show, at least, because there are a ton of stocks moving off of that news yesterday after the bell. We do have one guest today. We left ourselves the day open to have the flexibility to book guests last minute. We booked Mark Yesko from Morgan Creek Capital Management. He will be on the show at 8:35. A couple other movers to discuss. We of course have the Fed meeting today with the interest rate hike likely, so we'll talk about that. But the big story of the day is of course that the media M&A and the follow through from that. Joel, what are the S&Ps doing this morning?
We are trading into green by 4.5 points. Pre-market high, 27.96. Not a real important number. You did have a couple closes up there in March, so that is one target on the upside. Above that, into the 2,800 handle we go. We have crude trading down 35 cents to 66 even, starting to consolidate a little bit. Gold futures are down $1.60 at 1297.80. Silver going the opposite way, up 4 cents at 16.935. And let's see how Bitcoin is doing this morning. Bitcoin futures are trading in the red by $107.50, bearing down on the low of the move here. That's critical. $6,000 level looks like it's going to be tested real soon. Dennis is fired up. He has a bunch of stocks to talk about. Let's talk about the approval of the big merger.
Spencer, give us the details on the ruling yesterday after the close.
I mean, the details are the merger was appealed without any restrictions, I guess. There was some talk or maybe they'll approve the deal with a couple caveats, go back and do this and change that. But no, none of that, just all out approval. AT&T wins, Department of Justice loses. And so this deal for $85 billion is going to go through.
Okay, let's first talk just AT&T and Time Warner, because a lot of people ask me, why is AT&T getting killed? Okay, the first reason here is just the simple arbitrage, because the spread between AT&T and Time Warner going into the ruling was over 8%. So basically, you know, that was the risk, what the risk arbs were putting on, saying that, you know, the ruling might not go in the favor and Time Warner, you know, might not get acquired here and it might sell off. Once that ruling came out, it's obviously apparent that the deal is likely going through. I know they can appeal it, but in all likelihood, this deal is likely going through here now. So risk arbs are bringing that spread in. So what they do here, you've got to look at the ratio. And the ratio with the current price of AT&T is $53.75 in cash plus 1.437 shares of AT&T. That is what Time Warner is worth. So our risk arbs come in and they sell the AT&T off and buying Time Warner. So they're basically trading in the AT&T for the Time Warner because it's cheaper, so relative to where it was. So that spread has come in all the way now. And if you do the quick math, and you've got to continuously calculate this because as AT&T moves, the price changes on you. But if you just go AT&T, current price is 32.80, let's take. So we'll go 32.8 times the 1.437. So doing that live here with you, that gives you $47.13. And you add on the 53.75, which is the cash component of it, and you get $100.88. Time Warner currently trading at $99.76. So about a dollar down. So if you do put this on, there's another dollar there potentially. The way to put it on is to short the AT&T against it and to buy the Time Warner. And that's what the risk arbs did last night. And that's why you see the sell-off in AT&T and the buying in Time Warner. Now, it was basically in line, though, last night, and I would say it was in line, you know, with this 1% spread when AT&T was up at 33.5. AT&T has fallen 60 cents farther now. So now you have other factors. You have fundamental traders coming in and saying, look, you know, we think this is a big pill to swallow for AT&T. It's a lot of money they're paying for this. And they're not, you know, happy about that. And that's what you're seeing this morning is, you know, even when this deal was announced, I believe AT&T actually initially got hit a little bit on it because it's, what is it, $80 billion, Spencer? 85, 80?
It's 85, and the deal is expected to close before June 20th. So
going to close very quickly here. Yes. So that's big money. That's big bucks here for AT&T to pay. Obviously, you know, they're going to have to, you know, figure out where they're getting that money, if they're either raising debt or, you know, using other assets to pay for it. But, I mean, obviously a lot of it's coming from stock, but there's a $53.75 cash component as well. So, you know, probably a little bit more debt's going to be there, and that's concerning as well. So that's why the stock's trading down. It's a nice, healthy yield of 6.1%. I've had multiple people ask me, are you buying AT&T on this dip? You know what? I own a little bit of AT&T in my invest portfolio. I've had it in there for more than a decade. I'm probably eventually going to sell this. I've talked about selling it before, and you know why? I just think that long-term, short-term, I don't know where this thing's going to go. But long-term, I think there's going to be more and more competition in this industry. You know, content is getting, you know, cheaper and cheaper. You've got Netflix that's eating into the cable business, obviously. That's why I don't like stocks like Comcast long-term either. So I don't know. I just see the industry evolving, and it doesn't look as good as it did 10 years ago when I bought it. So fundamentals are changing here. It's got a 6.1% dividend for a reason. There is risk. I don't know. I don't see that dividend imminently getting cut or anything like that. But, you know, take us 2 years down the road. You know, think about how many of your friends in, you know, Joel have, you know, got rid of their cable subscription for, you know, for Netflix. A lot of my friends don't have cable anymore because they've got Netflix. So that eats into the pie a little bit. You know, they've acquired DirecTV. Those assets probably are worth a lot less than they acquired them for.
But that's why they went out and acquired the content just now, right? That's why.
Well, that helps. But still, let's look at the previous acquisition, DirecTV, where they paid a huge premium, $95 for it. Since then, Dish, which is really the only public other, you know, satellite, you know, provider there, mm-hmm. has went from $65 to $30. So it's pretty, you know, obvious that probably DirecTV would have went down as well. And I mean, they're struggling too. People are not subscribing to satellite TV when you can get Netflix for $8 a month. So it is eating into the pie. And I think, you know, long term, this is just my argument against, you know, the buying AT&T, because some people say, oh, it's a cash cow, it's a bond, 6.1%. It's completely safe, you know, jump in there, it's free money. I think there's risk. I think there's risk involved. Joel, you're quiet in the background. What are your thoughts?
I mean, they have obviously a plan here, and it's not, you know, a one or a two. It's a 5, a 10-year plan here where they're going to try and transform, you know, the media entertainment industry. I don't know what that plan is, and they're paying a huge price tag to do this. So, I mean, they're, you know, they've done mergers over the years. You just mentioned the one with the DirecTV. That wasn't too good. I'll just wait for things to shake out fundamentally or technically here. Look at it short-term perspective here. 32.60 is your pre-market low. But if they really hate this deal and people are really turning the tide on AT&T long-term, then we should be down at this 31.17, you know, maybe not today, but over the next few days. So I think the longer it takes to get there, I'll just look at it technically. I may lean on that elbow. I see a lot of support in the lower $32 handle. So that's what I'm going to wait for. I'm going to wait to see if it comes down and test that low. If it comes down and, you know, it builds a base, then I may take a shot at it on the long side here. But it's a nice yield, but you know, if this thing goes to $25, who cares about the yield?
I mean, phones are getting cheaper too. Like, think about different plans, different providers. There's competition all over the place there for them. It's not like they have the monopoly anymore. Yes, they're the big player. Yes, them and Verizon are the two big guns, but a lot of little competition coming in from all over the place against their businesses. And that, you know, with the debt that AT&T already has, it's a little bit scary long term.
The one thing I'll say, so $85 billion, that essentially sets the market right now. So we had a report yesterday that this decision is going to be the precursor. Based on what happens yesterday, Comcast is going to announce today a I guess, higher bid for the Fox assets, the same Fox assets that Disney had originally agreed to purchase. So a bidding war for Fox between Comcast and Disney. The original, if you remember, the original or the last offer from Comcast was $60 billion for most of Fox. Not all of Fox, most of it. They're also, at the same time, they have $31 billion on the table to buy Sky over in the UK. So $60 billion was the old offer for Fox. Expect we'll see a higher number today. So the $85 billion, I'm saying, could be that could be cheap, you know? I mean, that could be cheap.
But maybe they're all overpaying. I mean, I think, you know,
it's all relative,
when the dust settles 5 years from now, everybody's going to overpay for content here.
It's all relative, though. So
it's relative right now, but if they all go down, it's all an overpayment, and it's all bad for those companies long term. I mean, Comcast down for a reason today, because they're going to overpay for Fox.
Sure. Yeah, whoever wants
the shareholders Fox, are kind of voting with their money. It's down 4.5% in the pre-market, and they're scared of a higher bid.
Sure, whoever
wants it. I think
it's
an overpay, too.
Yeah, whoever wants it's going to have to pay a pony up. It's not going to be cheap. It's going to be more than 85, because 85 is now the market.
It's a great point you're making. Content is the way to play this, I think, right now. I've been pounding the table on AMCX. You know I've been talking about that stock for what? 2 months, 3 months on the show. I've still got it in my long-term portfolio. It's one of my biggest positions because I think AMCX is a cheap content play. I think a stock like AMCX could get scooped up. It's $4 billion. It could go for $6 billion. If it goes for $6 billion, it's an $80 or $90 stock.
So that's one. AMCX.
I expect it to be up here today. It is trading up in the pre-market. I'd be shocked if it wasn't up 3 or 4% by the end of the day as well. I'm holding on to that long-term. Had it in my portfolio for a while. I like that as a content play. There's a ton of other ones
here. Yeah, we've got Lionsgate/Starz, right? LGF.
LGF.E or LGF.A, pick your poison. There's two stocks. Oh, well, media stocks always have two issues, but
we've got Discovery, right?
DISCA.
We've got, well, Viacom and CBS are kind of in their own thing right now.
But they're both content plays, too. I mean, they're both trading up. CBS is up $2, too.
Yeah, but who's going to want to touch that before we know the outcome of that lawsuit?
Yeah, because they might buy each other. So we don't really know what's happening there either. But somebody's saying it's a potential play here as well.
Sure.
Trading up 3.6%. Dish, D-I-S-H, which is Dish Network. I mean, that's the content.
No, it's not.
You know, that's your provider. But
that's distribution. It's distribution.
So it's trading up.
So distribution is Dish. It's Cox, it's Altius, ticker ATUS, it's Charter. Those are your smaller.
Those are trading up too.
Right, those are your smaller. They're going to have to, actually, I shouldn't say they're going to have to, but yeah, so those are your smaller distribution plays that could be your acquirers. I would think maybe a larger content play like Netflix acquires a distribution play. That's unlikely, but I suppose anything is possible at this point. So yeah, those are your smaller distribution plays, Charter, Dish, Cox, Altius. You know, you talk about Netflix, who's kind of on an island all by themselves with what's their market cap? $160 billion.
Everybody's buying them now.
No one's going to buy them. Are they going to buy someone? Are they going to buy Dish?
I think Netflix could buy someone. I've said before, I thought Netflix could buy like a little AMCX. I mean, that would be like a nothing pill for them to swallow. There's so many big players up there. That's why I like the real little plays. I mean, you can come in with a Fox and, you know, go for the guests. Don't spend, you know what, you're going to spend $60 billion or $65 billion to get them. Or you can get some of these little plays. I mean, what's the market cap on Lionsgate? I mean, and that's why it's trading up so much. Like, these are easy little
acquisitions. Last I checked, it was like $5 billion.
These are small little drops in the bucket for a Disney or a Comcast or a Netflix to swallow. So, you know, especially the used stock, $4.9 billion, Lionsgate, AMCX. I like the little content plays. You know, you could even go up to like an MSG Networks. You know, these are just small little content plays that are dirt cheap.
You know, it's funny because MSG was actually, I think, put on the market a year ago. I don't think they got any interest from anyone.
I think they could get some interest here today. So these are stocks that are probably going to trade higher today, initially today, just on the potential that they could get acquired. We've given you a list of like a dozen here. You know, we can continue on, and there's actually a lot of other sectors here. You think about vertical mergers. Sure. Think about other ones that are on the table here right now, too. T-Mobile, Sprint, both of those stocks trading higher because, you know, obviously this opens the door for that merger to potentially go through if it does. And then also there's the one on the table, which you mentioned earlier, Spencer, CVS Aetna.
Right.
Both of those stocks trading higher, too, because they think, well, if this Time Warner AT&T didn't get stopped, then they're probably not
nothing's getting stopped at this point.
Yeah, it's going to be M&A action here happening in a lot of different sectors. So I know somebody mentioned last night, even we remember Walmart was rumored to be looking in. Who are they rumored there? Just a little while ago, a few months ago, you heard a rumor. Humana. Remember the Walmart Humana rumors? Which I was like, whoa, that's kind of out of the blue. I mean, I don't even understand that. But anyways, it was a rumor before. So you could see some, you know, obviously some mergers happening, maybe some acquisitions happening from outside the sector as well.
What about one?
So it gets interesting. M&A action could heat up.
What about one? And I, our guest, Mark Yuska, will be on in about 10 minutes or so. So we're gonna keep going for now. What about one that's not really moving off this news? WWE, talk about content play.
Yeah, and you know what? I agreed with you, Spencer. I actually picked up a little bit there last night. I think so. If it's all about content, I think WWE could catch a bit too. I mean, it's so overextended now, so it's scary to really stick on. This one's not cheap. It's not a cheap play. Oh, it's been a monster. But if you're just thinking the content's going to get scooped up here, I mean, sure. It could potentially get a bid.
Who watches TV, though? I saw someone in that mentioned in the chat. I mean, you watch a little bit of sports here. I mean, is it, are people going to be consuming this on their phones? I mean,
well, they do.
Well, yeah. That actually brings us to kind of a tangential stock of the morning, which is
that's
Twitter.
That's what we're all about.
Which is Twitter, who has in the past gotten sports rights. Twitter's trading up this morning as well. I think partly off of this and partly off of the fact that the U.S. was awarded or U.S. and I guess Canada and Mexico too, but mostly the U.S. was awarded the World Cup, the 2026 World Cup this morning, which J.P. Morgan in their note yesterday specifically highlighted that fact that if we got the World Cup, that'd be good for Twitter. So that happened this morning. Twitter is up, I think, on kind of both of those Canada lists this morning. And so this could be an option for you, Joel. You say, who watches Twitter? Who maybe for sports? Well, you know, people, if companies like Twitter and Apple and Amazon and Facebook decide to go all in on that, then they got the cash to do it. And now AT&T does, and not many other people do. So
Twitter's trading. They're getting a nice boost this morning. Boy, this thing is just a runaway train. It hit 44.33 yesterday. So we're opening right into yesterday's high. Big volume yesterday on that move up. So pre-market, just trading at the highs of the session. I'm keeping an eye on 44.33. Nice timed upgrade yesterday by or price target raised by JP Morgan.
So content is going to be hot here this morning. And, you know, we're not trying to say, like, and some of the people in the chat, who cares about this? I mean, we try to give you trading ideas. This is what the point of the show is to come up with trading ideas. These stocks are going to be moving today. So we want to give you the ideas. When we try to give ideas before they start moving, sometimes, you know, obviously these have already moved after hours, but maybe some of them potentially open a little bit too low and you can get a trade off it. That's what it's all about. I mean, that's what our show is all about, is giving you trading ideas. So, you know, when we, you know, think of something that could potentially move off it, or hear that something's going to move off of it, we're going to mention it to you guys, because that's what we're all about. We don't want to get caught too. I mean, some people could get caught saying, oh, well, Viacom's trading up. Well, that's silly. Well, not really, because it's a content, you know.
I think he was referring to the content that's being acquired. I don't think he meant hard content.
No, I know, but the content that's being acquired is going to be hot here today.
Yeah,
so
it is.
Does it stay hot? Is this a long-term play? Well, that's still to be determined, probably. But, you know, we're a short-term trading show for the most part. You know, we have different trading ideas all the time, so you got to be aware of what's moving.
The one thing that's most interesting this morning is probably Netflix, because they are trading up a little bit. I saw that Goldman. So, like, you would think this is bad for Netflix, right?
I would think so, for sure.
Because they're kind of all alone here on their island.
And they're going to be the potential acquirer. I would think I would throw them in the category of Disney
right,
Comcast. Comcast are down directly because they're going to go on a bidding war for
exactly,
Fox.
Exactly, right.
But I would think Netflix, the buyer, too.
Right. So, Goldman, I think, raised their price target, what was it, to a 490? I think I saw that. They raised it to 4, which is a street high. So Goldman price target raises, I think, enough to drive it.
That trumps.
Sure.
That trumps the negative impact. But of
I don't get that, though. I really don't get that. I don't see – I mean, like, I don't see how this is good for Netflix. I really don't.
No, I don't either. I think it's a lot of, you know, what you just said, Goldman raised price target, everybody just buys it blindly. But I just look at Netflix and, you know, yeah – It's so hard to short the stock. I mean, it goes up almost every single day. Here it was trying to make a new all-time high here again this morning, but I don't see how this is good for Netflix at all. They're, you know, 2 years ago, sure, because somebody would scoop them up. Nobody's right. buying Netflix now. They're actually right. on the other side of the coin where they're going to potentially be the acquirer. Like I've said before, I think that they could scoop up something like an AMCX or some of these smaller ones just for added content. I mean, Lionsgate, like they could be in, you know, the books. It'd be easy for them to do, just do an all stock deal and then they have to cost you cash.
Okay, so here's the fun part now. Here's the fun part now. Now that net neutrality is officially gone, and AT&T is going to, by the end of the month, control the pipes and some of the content too. Who's to stop AT&T from just slowing down Netflix a little bit on their service? Maybe, you know, they want they want people to watch HBO, right? Because they own HBO now. Who's to stop people from who's to stop them from slowing down Netflix? They have a 10% stake in Hulu that they're going to inherit. They'd rather you watch Hulu. They'd rather you watch HBO. They're going to show. They're going to maybe slow down their Netflix. Slow down your other cord cutting platforms.
That's legal. That's not the view of Benzinga.
It's legal.
They can't do that, Spencer.
They can do it. They can do it. It's legal.
Not legally.
Who's to stop them? So then the question becomes, how much do you value your Netflix over your internet? Are you, if let's say AT&T decides to slow down their Netflix, are you gonna change providers because you really want your Netflix? Maybe. Or are you gonna say I'm gonna keep my internet and Netflix is just slow and I'll watch it less. Who's to say? But now that this is the first domino to fall, so you know, no one wants to be the first one to come out and say, "Oh yeah, we're gonna slow down certain websites." But they can do it if they wanted to. So, you know, the ball's
gonna be some competition heating up.
Yeah. The ball's in their court. Okay.
Traded up. I just real quickly that before. Netflix traded up to 372.40. It's backed off though, but I'll just let you guys know the former all-time high was at 369.83, and the former all-time closing high was 65.80. So I'd use that as a level, and also you wonder what after this big Goldman note, if this goes red on the day, could be some more downside. Dennis, you know, I went on a lot of tangents. Remember my tangent about 3 or 4 years ago when I was totally convinced that Apple was going to buy CBS because of content? Yeah.
You're only 3 years too early on that. You know what? You would have made money on it, though. I actually bought CBS on that. You know, we both played it a little bit, and it went up. We bought it like 32, and we sold it like 35, and we thought we were heroes. Now it's 55. Oops, wrong move. Shouldn't have sold.
AT&T is, man, 5 million shares have traded so far. And if I'm a little support here, pre-market low is 32.60 and seems to be coming in here a little bit. I mean, also, you had this big run up ahead of it from 31, almost 31 and change, almost to fill the gap. And now, really, I mean, if you want to come up with a good number, 31.17. Let's call it 34.5. That's a 3.5-point move, 1.75. You know, it takes you right back up to that 32.25, 32.5 area. I think that's going to be your first line of defense here in AT&T. It's short to probably bringing it in here on this news. 8:24, you want to cover
just,
one?
Just before we move from the media stocks, we just had a question in the chat. We like to address the questions.
Of course.
It's a good one. Stock Hunter says, why is VIA and VIAB different in price? The only difference, fundamental difference between VIA and VIAB.
Here we go again.
That's it. Just voting rights. It used to trade with like a 10 or 20 cent premium. Now it trades with a ridiculous premium. I don't know why they have given so much more premium to VIA versus VIAB. If it gets acquired, I'm very curious. And obviously you got Redstone's and you got a lot of other issues there on the VIA. But I mean, at the end of the day, I don't know if you're going to get that much of a premium over VIA. So I would expect the spread over the long term to actually come in here because of this news. And it's 5 points out right now. So, or actually, yeah, so 29, 27 is where it's bid this morning, VIA. And then VIAB or VIAB. And VIA is up at 34.85. You know, it's $5, $6 difference. That's a lot of money for voting rights that might not be worth anything if the whole company gets acquired. So it's interesting, and you know, I agree. I think it's a ridiculous premium that people pay for those voting rights. I don't understand it, but that's the market influence. And then you have VIA, which is very tightly held. There's my dyslexia kicking in, and it's sometimes difficult to borrow that stock. So it's prone to little short squeezes in there when the locate becomes tough. But in any regard here, that's the only difference, is voting rights.
All right. Let's see what Mark Yusko thinks about all this. We 25 minutes into the show, we talked about one story, but that's okay. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to grab Mark Yusko, the CIO of Morgan Creek Capital Management. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. Pre-market prep. We are now joined by Mark Yusko from Morgan Creek Capital Management. Mark, how's it going this morning?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
All right. I guess we'll just get your thoughts on this out of the way, and we can move on to non-AT&T Time Warner things. But what was your reaction to the news yesterday, and what does it mean, in your opinion, for the, kind of the rest of the industry in terms of consolidation?
Yeah, look, I think somebody paid a lot of money for this merger to go through. So that's good for everybody else who wants to consolidate in the industry. So I think we'll see a bunch more announcements in the coming weeks of other mergers. Look, vertical integration argument, yeah, that holds a little bit of water. And at the end of the day, I actually am a market guy. I like letting the market work. I don't like the fact that, you know, a number of these companies are in the top 10 of lobbying dollars. So they seem to get their way more often than others, but it's not a bad thing.
Mark, a couple other things that I wanted to cover with you. Yes, yesterday we had an extended discussion with one of our guests about Deutsche Bank. And I can remember when it was back around this area, I think we had you on, and I remember I was waiting for this thing to break down, and you were kind of, you still had some hope for it. You still a little bit of bullishness, and turned out it rallied again, but once again, you know, here it is, you know, back down near multi-year lows. You know, the financial, you know, who knows? I mean, JP Morgan's come out and said they're not that much tied to Deutsche Bank. I mean, if you're looking for something that could be a very negative catalyst in the market, and these, by the way, these financials have just been in the absolute doghouse. Here we are back at $11, $11.50 again in Deutsche Bank. Are you going to still maintain? And I would call it a somewhat bullish outlook.
Well, look, you know, it's funny. I was on with you guys, I think literally the day after I had been on TV, and just randomly, that was the day I was supposed to be on for something else. And that was randomly the day that the DOJ announced that they were going to fine them $20 billion. And the commentator on TV said, oh, you know, isn't this a terrible thing? Isn't this company going to go bankrupt? I said, first of all, there is zero chance they're going to pay $20 billion. You know, this was just gamesmanship on the Apple fine from the European Union. And I think in the end, they paid $2 billion. Not that $2 billion isn't a big number, but it wasn't 20. And I think the stock hit $11 that day. That was 9/30/2016. And, you know, I said, actually here at this level, it's a buy. It went from 11 to 19. Now it's back to 11. Look, people are trying to compare this to Lehman Brothers. Everybody's got that famous chart now of the Lehman overlay with Deutsche Bank. That's just a dumb comparison. I'm sorry to the person who created it, but it's just dumb, right? Lehman was a third tier investment bank in the US. This is the National Bank of Germany. There is zero chance that the German government lets Deutsche Bank go. So I think it's way too big to fail. If we can create a WTBTF, and it will be fine. And the equity is not going anywhere.
So you think, you know, despite the problems and despite the stock price, that this actually is just, why is Deutsche Bank so weak relative to basically every other bank in the world?
Well, all the European financials are weak.
True.
I mean, it's not the only bank that's down. I mean, U.S. financials, I think, have been going, well, they had been going up. They've rolled over here recently, but they had been going up on the hopes of higher interest rates and higher net interest margins. The problem is the yield curve keeps flattening, not steepening. You only get a higher net interest margin if your long rate's higher than your short rate, and that has not been happening. So this false hope for financials I thought was crazy all along. But the European financials have fallen off a cliff because, look, Europe has fallen back off a cliff. You know, their inflation has turned down again, heading back towards deflation. Their growth has turned down almost to recession again. Japan did turn into recession. So global growth is slowing down. All this trade war rhetoric and all this isolationism and protectionism and populism is not good for global growth. So it shouldn't be a surprise, I guess, to anybody that there's some weakness in these shares. I think Deutsche Bank is overdone. And, you know, not that I'm pounding the table that everybody should run out and buy it. But look, if you own it here at 11, I think you're probably going to make some money.
And so with these, you know, with the going on with the trade tariffs and the slowing in the world global economy, this market just seems to have the blinkers on and continue just grinding higher. Good profits in the last quarter here. Where's the disconnect, or where do you see the market coming back in line with the global fundamentals?
Look, as long as we have stealth QE in the form of bubble fuel through stock buybacks, you know, this whole thing about the Tax Reform Act, it's absolutely insane that we're this late in an economic cycle that we're cutting taxes. Well, why did we do that? Well, we did that because the Fed ran out of the ability. They can't buy equities. You know, Bank of Japan can buy equities. Swiss National Bank can buy equities. The Fed can't buy equities. So what were they going to do? Because they knew they had to, at least in theory, make the case that they were going to take liquidity out of the system, do quantitative tightening. Well, if they're going to do quantitative tightening, what's going to happen to the markets? You saw as soon as the Fed started selling bonds in February in earnest, the market rolled over and it was going down hard. So you had to do something. And so we had record buybacks of stock. So companies are levering up to buy back stock. And we're going to have record-setting buybacks again in the second quarter. And to me, that's just stealth QE. And that is, it's like the anti-gravity device. It's like upsidazium. And at some point, it will wear off. And it's like the Wile E. Coyote market. Eventually, gravity will rule. I can't tell you when. I do think there's some likelihood that it is at a similar timing with an economic downturn, which I can't remember whether it was BAML or somebody came out with, you know, there are 19 indicators they watch and now 13 of them have turned negative for recession watch. I don't think recession's around the corner, but I do think 2019 is an interesting time to watch. And cyclically, that lines up very well with, you know, one of my favorite guys, W.D. Gann, who wrote this financial modeling tool, financial prediction tool back in 1909. You know, he got the 1929 crash right. He got the 1991 crash right. He got the 2000 crash right. And he says the next crisis starts in 2019. So should be interesting.
Let's take this over to Bitcoin. And you've been a fan of Bitcoin here for a while. I follow you on Twitter. It's come down obviously from the highs, but you've been on this train for a long time. So, you know, we know it overshot. It's come back in. Tell us, you know, the bull scenario here, because, you know, everybody is now, you know, backing off, and there's people that are obviously, you know, fearful that, you know, the Bitcoin, you know, has lower, you know, a lot more room on the downside as well. Give us a bull scenario and why you're a believer in Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting topic because it's amazing to me how few people actually do any work at all, right? They don't really understand that this is technology, right? This is a technology. It's a technological innovation that I believe is as big. Actually, I think it's bigger. I think it's bigger than the internet. You know, the internet of value is really just an extension of this technological wave of computing power that started back in the 50s, 1954. We had the mainframe. Then in 1968, we had the microchip that increased computing power. Then in 82, we had the personal computer, increased computing power. Then 96, mobile net, and in 2024, now that's still 6 years from now, I think we're going to have this thing that's going to be labeled the Internet of Value. And what the Internet did to information and commerce, the Internet of Value is going to do to all things of value, money, goods, anything that you can monetize, stream of cash flows, anything is going to be transferred over IP. So this is a monster technology. And the thing that's interesting is people seem to not understand the future capabilities to the current capabilities ratio, right? The potential of someone when they're young is very high. Their capabilities may not be very high. Like a 9-year-old doesn't have a lot of skills, but by 18, their skills have grown exponentially. By 27, their skills have grown exponentially. And same thing with technology. You know, who would have thought Amazon 9 years in, and I think the stock crashed, you know, some 90 plus percent that year. In fact, Amazon over the last 20 years has had a double-digit crash in every single year of its existence. The average is 31% to the downside. Yet when was a good time to sell Amazon? That would be never. But I don't know anybody who bought it on the IPO and still holds it. So that's a long-winded way of saying that Bitcoin is just getting warmed up. It's a brand new technology as technologies go. It's 9 years old. It's been a long time coming. I wrote a long piece about this. This traces its roots back to 1988. A guy named Tim May wrote the Crypto Anarchist Manifesto. And the cover of The Economist magazine that year, 1988, predicted that in 2018 we'd have a global currency. And they even had a little gold coin on the cover of the magazine. Now, I say, why is it always a gold coin when we talk about Bitcoin? There's no gold and there's no coin. You know, it's electrons. And it's a ledger on a distributed ledger system. So, look, I think distributed ledger technology is amazing. I think cryptography is amazing. I think you put these things together. And the greatest thing about Bitcoin is it decreases the barriers, the borders that we've erected. And it takes the power away from central banks who can devalue the currency. And you think about what's going on in the United States. They're part of the reason stocks keep going up. They go up in nominal terms. Here's an amazing stat. If you look at 2000, we were in a bubble. The markets were high. But if you divided that by gold, it was still high. By 2008, it looked like we had another bubble. But if you divided by gold instead of dollars, it actually was lower than 2000. Then today, it looks like it's double the height of the bubble of 2000 and 2008. Yet divided by gold, we're down about 60%. So this is a classic banana republic technique. You concentrate the assets in the elite, in the wealthy, and then you devalue the currency to increase the value of the assets and inflate away your debt. It's genius, it's cruel, and that's why I have the greatest income and wealth inequality we've ever had. Bitcoin helps solve that. So we think about the future of Bitcoin. It's going to move in parabolic ups, right? This is not the first time we've seen it go up 10x. And then it has a digestion move back to the normal network value. This is a network. The value of a network is valued by the number of participants that get involved and the capital that they put into the system. The value of the network today is somewhere between $10,000 and $11,000 per coin. When it got to 20,000, I tweeted back in December that, hey, this was a bad time to enter. We were going to have a correction. It was probably going to go sub 10 sometime in the first quarter. And then it would get back to this normal growth curve. And now, over the course of time, I think this will be a multi-trillion dollar market. I think it'll be a lot higher in the future.
Why Bitcoin? That's my last question there, just because there's so many other cryptocurrencies out there. And I just think of, you know, with the internet, you know, and I was trading 1999, there was so many internet stocks. It was hard to pinpoint that Amazon was going to be the big winner of it all. And, you know, there was a lot of, obviously, internet stocks, you know, pets.com that went to zero. Why is Bitcoin the coin to own and not some other cryptocurrency?
It's a really important point. I just want to make one clarification. There actually aren't that many cryptocurrencies. Okay. There are thousands, actually, you know, 1,700 tokens, utility tokens. Those are not cryptocurrencies. Utility tokens are very different. A cryptocurrency is something like Bitcoin or Zcash or Ethereum or Dash that intends to be a store of value or a medium of exchange. Those other tokens that everybody talks about is, oh, there's infinite supply of crypto. No, there's not. Crypto is crypto. Utility tokens are either a means of, you know, being part of a social network or like a points program, or they could even be a security token, which is ownership of a business. That I think is going to be the biggest opportunity in digital securities. But crypto, why Bitcoin? Okay. It's the network effect. You know, why VHS instead of Betamax? Betamax was better technology. Why Facebook instead of MySpace? Everybody says, oh, well, Bitcoin's just MySpace. Ah, no, no, no. This is open source. In MySpace days, in the tech days, back when we were trading in 99-2000, as you mentioned, okay, you had companies that had proprietary technology and it was good, like MySpace, until somebody came along with a better technology, Facebook. So then what happens is Facebook takes all the share. In an open source world, Bitcoin isn't perfect, right? It's not perfect to be a global currency right now. Today, it's more of a store of value. It's digital gold. But over time, anybody that adds an increasing usefulness of technology, Bitcoin can copy paste and bring that over, like the Lightning Network or SegWit or whatever it is, all of those technological capabilities can be copy-pasted on to the Bitcoin technology. That's the beauty of open source. So why Bitcoin? Because Bitcoin won, right? Going from $0 to $10 was the miracle. The fact that it survived at all was the miracle. 10 to 100, not a miracle. 100 to 1,000, not a miracle. 1,000 to 10,000, not a miracle. 10,000 to 100,000 or 10,000 to a million, not a miracle. The key is that it survived to this point, and networks get valuable because more people use them. And the more people, think about this. If every millionaire in the world tried to buy one Bitcoin, they couldn't do it. And does every millionaire in the world want to protect some portion of their assets off the grid, outside the network, central bank network? I think they probably do.
Banking on Bitcoin, the best Bitcoin explainer that I've ever seen, a documentary on Netflix, highly recommended. It came out from before the craziness of last year. So if you want to, that was the best background that I ever got on Bitcoin. Mark Yosko, Morgan Creek Capital Management, thanks so much for the time, and have a good day.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, let's get back to the stocks. We have a Fed meeting today, or an announcement today. Should we you want to go there? You want to go to Tesla's cutting some jobs?
I mean, we got 18 minutes. There's so much stuff to talk about there. That wasn't even on my radar there, but you know, it's important to remember those, obviously, because they do move on. Your banks move the most off of that. So you know, if you're trading the banks around 2 o'clock, you got to be aware of when we're going to have a Fed meeting. There's a lot of ratings changes here, Spencer. There was other news.
I wanted to mention, looks like, who was it? Was it AMC, AMCX? So someone just added $500 million to their buyback. I think it was AMCX. Yeah, AMC, $500 million buyback plan. So it looks like they agree with you.
Is it AMCX or is it AMC, entertainment?
It's AMCX. So they agree with you.
They're buying their own stock.
They're buying their own stock.
Because they listen to Benzinga's pre-market.
That's it. They're like, well, you know what? If we're going to get acquired, they're going to acquire less shares, and we're going to buy more of our stock back.
Yep, they agree.
Anyways, that's my favorite play in the media space right now is AMCX. It's cheap. I like that. I like the Lionsgate too. I would, you know, but now the problem is you're chasing these things a bit. Like, you know, I'm from AMCX from 51. So I'm sitting a little bit more comfortable from a valuation standpoint. Even as a standalone company, it kind of made sense down there. Now it starts to get a little stretched. Now it's like if you're buying up here, you're hoping that it gets scooped up. I do think it goes off the board at 75 or 80. You know, I don't know when that's going to happen, but I think eventually somebody scoops them up. And that's why I'm sticking with it.
Okay, just real quick about the Fed meeting there. I mean, it's a consensus that going up quarter point. Looking for guidance. I mean, I've heard some rumors of a half a point. A half a point would spook the market. I know. I'm just telling you what different people, that would spook the market. But a quarter point looks in line, and then they'll be looking for some guidance as well. We do have one earnings stock, a disaster today. Give us the numbers for Herb. H&R Block trading down nearly 20%. Must have been a bad quarter, or was it bad guidance?
It was bad guidance. The Q4 numbers weren't terrible. $5.42, that beat the estimate, which was $5.27. Sales of $3.2 billion, that beat the estimate by a lot, which was $2.34 billion. They also raised their dividend by a penny, 24 to 25 cents per share. The guidance they gave on the call was, here we go. Actually, did they give, I don't see a specific number from the call. I know they gave
guidance. They must have said something bad.
They said something. I know it came from the call. I'm assuming it was guidance, but I don't have a number for you, unfortunately.
Just knowing, you know, seeing the stock down 20%, obviously. Usually guidance trumps everything, so assuming that they probably said something there that on the call that wasn't good, and stock trading down. I wasn't following the story at all, simply because there was so much other news there last night. So it was like on a normal night when you didn't have the AT&T Time Warner stuff going on, you would have been all over H&R Block because it's a big mover. But there was so many other movers last night that this just didn't hit the radar. I mean, we got support here to talk about, though, Joel. This is now giving back its last 3 months of gains in one foul swoop. Thoughts here as we pull back to basically 52-week lows.
Yeah, well, 2430, you mentioned that as a number. We're trying to get above that level right now. We were lower. We were into the 23 handle. 2329 is your pre-market low. So now that you're a buck over that, I look some back and fill here, maybe test that low. Beyond that, man, you haven't been in these levels since April of 2017. So if you're looking for a target below that pre-market low of 2329, 2282, I'd call it 23 bucks, could be potential support. And just on the 15-minute chart here, if you're thinking of shorting this thing or you're thinking of covering your short, someone has their foot on this at 2450. Going back here for quite some time, really since that 4 o'clock opening, it's bumped its head up against 2450. So if it gets above there, I expect a little bit of some short covering here in HRB.
We got a request from one of my followers there on Twitter. I'm just going to go grab to grab that request. Actually, it was requested last night. It was CTRV, I believe, here. I'm just trying to find the tweet. I'm going through my timeline here. Just bear with me. Oh, no, I can't find it. CTRV, I think, is the request.
Is it a
small penny stock?
Yeah.
Yeah, like a penny stock.
Well, not much to say about this one, Dennis. Traded down 17.
It was from Dmitry Dolinsky, and he's asking about CTRV.
Well, if you buy it at $1.42, the most you can lose is $1.42. The low of the move was $1.30, and that's been the recent low. Not sure they gotta have, if they have something in the pipeline or some kind of trial coming up, maybe take a shot at it. But Dennis,
I don't follow this story at all. I'll just tell you, when you see pharmaceutical stocks go from 50 bucks all time high to $1, it's nothing more than a lottery ticket. So, you know, speculative capital only is what I put there into these types of stocks. And, you know, sure, you know, you might have some squeezes, you might have some stocks, but more often than not, when they go from 50 to $1, eventually they go to zero. So this is just, you know, a speculative play now. And, you know, maybe, you know, this can turn it around. But CTRV, if that was the stock that he asked about and wasn't a typo, this is, you know, one of those that, you know, it's better days are, right, I think, behind it.
Yep. Very, very speculative here. S&Ps are leaking a little bit here. Still up 3 points at 91.25. Important at pre-market low, 89.25. Your close at 88.25. So there's your support right now going into about 12 minutes before the session goes. Dennis, you mentioned there were some other interesting ratings changes.
Yeah, there was a few. Yelp getting downgraded ages to sell.
Ooh.
Whenever they go to sell, it's always interesting here. Here's a stock that has not participated in the recent rally. So Yelp is looking a little bit heavy. And now we start breaking down here with down 3% in the pre-market. Probably going to challenge the low of the move, which is 40.71 back on June the 7th.
Yep.
There is some support at 40. So I'd say, you know, that's your first bounce level. Below that, then it gets dicey down to 37 bucks.
Yeah, we're trading down $1.20 here. I would take a look at that $40 level. Three consecutive lows. This is back to the beginning of April for 40.17 to 40.26. That's over $1 away. Longer it takes to get there, may get a little bit of a rally. Not a lot of volume trading, though, on the Yelpster.
Then also getting downgraded was Time Warner AT&T by Moffitt Nathanson. We've covered them extensively here. Yep. RBC is busy this morning in the semis. They are downgrading Lam Research, LRCX. They are also downgrading Applied Materials, AMAT. Both of those stocks weak here this morning.
Wow.
We've talked about LRCX. Can't seem to catch a bid either. It consolidated for a couple days. Now it starts to break down here again. There is some support. You had almost, you can look out to the, you know, weekly charts there. 181.67 is low on April 25th, and then you had almost the same low right around 182.16, so call it 182. I think that's a potential bounce level there. Below that, then it starts to open up again, but again, some of these things are heavy. I mean, you think about how hot Micron's been, and, you know, a little bit different, but, you know, Applied Materials was off and moving with it, and it's heavy too. It has not participated in the recent rally in the Qs. I mean, the Qs in the last month went from 160 to 175. Applied Materials in that same time period is flat, if not even down. So you're seeing, you know, a little bit of relative weakness here in some of your tech stocks. Not all are participating.
RBC upgrading ASML too to go with that. So three downgrades and an upgrade.
These charts are not.
Who do they upgrade?
ASML to outperform.
That's up big this morning. It's up $4 here. So the RBC busy moving some stocks here this morning.
Yeah, trading down 78 cents here in the AMAT. Dennis mentioned the low of the move there. Oh, way a ways away from the low of the move, 47.74. Another intermediate low. I mean, you haven't even taken out your May 21st low of 49.37. So there's a couple areas. I mean, this LRCX, it's interesting. This was falling a couple days ago or last week, and no one can figure out why. And here you do. You have a downgrade with it, the lows of the move. So see if you can get a washout off this. And then what do you say? Atmel was trading higher, ATML. Is that or
no? What was the upgrade, Spencer? ASML.
ASML.
I don't even know if that mel's around anymore. That one. Wow, it's getting a nice boost. Just be careful here. It's trading up 455. Your all-time high in this issue. We're taking it out. The all-time high was 213.35. So got to stay above that, or it could get a potential pullback here.
Grub, GRUBDC, wants to know about this stock is hot too, and it's blasting off and looking like it's ready to gearing up to. Yeah, this is now trading near all time highs here again. I mean, you talk about a stock that's been an unbelievable performer. In February 2016, so going back just over 2 years ago, it's $18. Now 113. So you're talking about a stock up like 900% in the last 2 years. So it's been a mover. It looks like it's gearing up to go again. The strong gets stronger. We've been talking about that on the show for a long time. This is breaking out to new all-time highs, trading up in the pre-market. I don't see any reason why this can't, you know, take off even further. Below $100, I wouldn't want any part of it. You know, that's obviously 13 points down, so it's a lot of risk to take on. But I really think the bulls are in charge anywhere above 100. So if you're buying it here, you kind of almost got to give it down to there, which makes it's a little tricky, you know, to play it when you got to give it that much room. I don't like giving some 13 points, but bulls are in control here.
Wow. I mean, have you ever used Grubhub?
Never.
Spencer? Anybody in the chat?
I have not.
Okay.
Can't argue with the chart, though.
No, I'm not arguing with the chart. At 114.73, that's your pre-market high on just a little bit of volume, though. So we'll see if it can maintain that. I'll just give you your former all-time high, 113.61. So, wow, Grub. I had not looked at this chart in a long time. All right, TJ Mosley, he's used Grub before. So we got one person using it, but, boy, great appreciation stock price.
And one more rating of note here. Hershey's getting downgraded to underperform, which is the equivalent of sell at Credit Suisse. I will tell you, we saw this yesterday in SEAS. It was a short squeeze going on, and it came right back on a downgrade to sell. Hershey's has been in an uptrend here for the last 3 or 4 days. You've got people who are caught short this thing.
Yeah, right? I agree.
So I think this actually gets bought. So I think it's down here, 91.5. It's light volume, only trade 1,900 shares. I don't think this is one that's going to just fall out of bed and fall down 90, 89, because food stocks have turned a little bit here as of late. So people are looking to get in these things on a pullback. And I think this is a pullback here that I actually be buying in Hershey's.
Okay. All right. Low of the move has been under $90. It's it was last week, went straight up, had a low at 89.29 and 89.63. That's still a couple bucks away, but we'll see if the bulls come out to defend Hershey's today. After you said it was a downgrade to sell, then
so it's down $2 for a reason, but I think when you look at this at the end of the day, I think you get some of these losses back.
Okay, all right.
Our short squeeze segment, I want to just talk about it again because we mentioned and there was multiple stocks. So I had 6 stocks on my list. I think I only covered 4 of them on the show, but I actually tweeted out about a couple of them yesterday. I'm kicking myself because almost all of these went up yesterday. So Overstock, which I don't know if I mentioned on the show, I tweeted it out and it was on my list to talk about. That is a potential short squeeze candidate. And it took off yesterday, OSTK, just blasted off. But not only that one, GoPro, which we did mention on the show. It blasted off another, was up another 5 or 6% there yesterday. We talked about GoGo, G-O-G-O. That was up for a bit, and then it gave it back. So that one wouldn't have worked, at least not longer term. BGFV was another one. We talked about Big Five. That one did go. That went from 875, when we mentioned on the show, up to 925 bid here this morning. Actually, some traders trading at 970. That's a little bit overdone here this morning. OCUL was another one. It took off as well. So it's funny, you know, you just, you know, basic research. But when you see short squeezes start happening, it's very important to go over and start looking, you know, at what has high short interest, because that can, you know, move fairly quickly. And we saw these six stocks that I had on my list. The other one was LCI. It didn't really move yet, but I still think there's a potential squeeze for that if you can get up over 17. So that is on my radar, LCI still. But the overstock move, this is what me and you were kicking about on the Joel, because we talked about it on the pre-market show. I think we did not get to it on the regular show, but I had tweeted it out pre-market there on Twitter and stock twits about it being, you know, a potential stock to squeeze. And OSTK just blasted off yesterday.
Wow, interesting news here. And Stryker talked about it going after BSX yesterday. Their 8K shows the company is not in discussions with Boston Scientific regarding a potential acquisition. Everyone,
what's that news? Stop. What's the news?
Stryker in their 8K said it is not in discussions with Boston Scientific.
So that's why Boston Scientific annihilated here this morning, and Stryker actually bouncing back, because they thought they were going to pay a premium for it, and they're apparently not.
Yeah, wow. I mean, this kind of moves, and we talked to about them a lot of times.
Who makes these rumors up? I mean, some of this stuff is just flat out being made up. Do you think that's the case? You see rumors all the time, and how many lately, you know, end up not being true? I mean, it seems like half these rumors we see circulate around
don't end up being...
real.
I would point yourself. You have to pay attention to the wording.
Where it's coming from.
Well, and no, I was going to say the wording of the headline. So the original report, I think, was from Dow Jones. They said that Strikeover made a takeover approach, and they had approached Boston Scientific. So the AK only says they're not in discussions. They could have been in discussions. They're not. If they're not anymore, then technically both of those things could be true.
When these things pop up 20% on a rumor, ring the register. Boston Scientific went from $31 to $37.30 on this rumor. Now you're giving it all back here. I mean, if you're getting a 20, sometimes these takeovers are for a 20% premium. You basically, you're getting it all priced in there right away. So, I mean, sometimes it just pays to just ring the register, especially when it's just on rumors. We saw this happen with Juniper. Remember with Juniper last year, and it was CNBC breaking the story, and if somebody was going to acquire Juniper, I can't remember who now. Joel's got the good memory. He might remember. But it went to like $35 or $36 that night. And the next morning they said, no, we're not looking at them. And boom, it's right back down to 28. So when you see an immediate 20% pop on just a rumor, it's a lot of times a good idea to at least take some off the table if you're long.
Yeah, and that Stryker bouncing right back this morning. This should be an interesting one, because the stock had just made an all-time high back last week at 179.84, had a dip down to 162 and change. That was so what do you got there? You got about an 18-point move, so 171, 172 area. It's trading above there, but, man, you got some ugly bars here to chew through. Keeping an eye on the pre-market high. The pre-market high is 174.24, so you want to see continued follow through that. Your 2-day high is way up at 173.60. So, I'm wrong on that. Your 2-day high was 179.60. So, a lot of room to make up here, a rebound on a false rumor.
Just quick imbalances before we go. Square, 72,000 to buy. Twitter, we talked about it a few times here this morning. 231,000 shares to buy. It's a big buy and balance on Twitter. Somebody asked about Snap. Is this a potential, play here along with Twitter? Sure, it's getting bit up here a little bit this morning. It's up 18 cents. 107,000 shares to buy, so somebody's buying along with that. AT&T has a buy and balance right now, 424,000 shares. I don't think that's going to last. That would mean the stock would open higher. It's trading down $1.35. The thing has already traded 10 million shares, so 424,000 shares, a drop in the bucket. So somebody's going to come in. That's going to probably flip to a sell imbalance here. But as of right now, there's a buy imbalance in AT&T, but half an hour to go. Alibaba, 67,000 to buy. Baba keeps coming up here in this 210 and then struggling above it. So just be careful coming back into resistance here where you were there once again. Sprint, 166,000 to buy this morning. We know there's going to be fallout here from that TWX decision, and it's Sprint that's actually given some life here as the deal with potential deal with T-Mobile's probably back on the table.
All right, S&P futures, one of the quietest pre-market sessions we've had here on the show in quite some time. Our trading range from the show, let's go from 8 o'clock on. Holy moly. We have been, since we started the show, we've had a range from 94 even and 91 even, only a 3-point range here. Keeping an eye on that pre-market high about 96 even, that was a double close from mid-March. On the downside, even if you take out that pre-market low of 89 and a quarter, you got to contend with the close at 88 and a quarter, your daily pivot right there at 88 even. So looks like they want to play it close to the vest here. Ahead of the Fed decision. Spencer, do you want to wrap up today's show and preview what's on the docket for Thursday?
Well, tomorrow we'll, of course, talk through the reaction from the likely interest rate hike today. We will also be joined by Mark Chaykin from Chaykin Analytics. But thank you to our guest today for joining us, Mark Yesko from Morgan Creek Capital Management. Thanks to all of you in our YouTube and pre-market .benzinga.com chat rooms. Thanks for the discussion. Thought it was great. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. You can catch the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Just search for Pre-Market Prep on any of those platforms. Have a good day, everyone, and we hope you join us again on Thursday.